The dancer's art is so ephemeral, and yet the name Nijinsky endures as a kind of mythical performer who flew higher than anyone else. He was the star of the legendary Ballet Russe, but he walked the fine line between genius and madness. But how would you capture all that accumulated magic and mystique on stage today? The Australian Ballet is performing a work simply called Nijinsky. It's the creation of John Neumeier, the long-standing director of the Hamburg Ballet in Germany. John created the work for Hamburg Ballet, and he's now recreating it for the Aussie Ballet. John, tell me first of all, what role Nijinsky has played in your life as a dancer and choreographer? Can you remember when you first learnt about him?
Yes, I can very well, actually, because I was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. At that time, the city did not have a ballet company or a major school. And I had the feeling of being drawn toward dance, even though I didn't really know what it was exactly. And in the library, the local library, there were probably four books about dance, and one of them was called The Tragedy of Nijinsky. And it was a book written by Anatole Bormann, who was a classmate of Nijinsky in St. Petersburg. And reading about Nijinsky made him and dance something human. And that was the beginning of it.
So when did you start learning dance in Milwaukee?
In Milwaukee. I suppose when I was about nine. But it was first because for a boy, it seemed, I suppose, more harmless to take tap dancing lessons, which I took for a while. And then I was advanced to acrobatic and eventually to ballet.
Well, with further training, you then joined the Stuttgart Ballet in the early 1960s. Did anything of the kind of dancer Nijinsky was, the kind of choreography he was, resonate with you then?
I think that the interest, the fascination grew because I studied more and more texts, more reference material, more books.
What was the fascination? I mean, why Nijinsky?
Well, there is about the entire Ballet Russe a sense of glamour and excitement and exoticism. So first it was for me, Nijinsky, as the center of this extremely exciting ballet world, as its star. I think also there, of course, are legends about the height of his jump and his technical feats. But what's more interesting is that people very often speak about or write about what he looked like when he jumped. And I think this is it, that what fascinated me also in looking at the many photographs and other artistic representations of Nijinsky, his possibility to transform himself.
Which of his dancing roles do you think was closest to a representation of his character, his essence?
I don't think any of them. I think that the very point of his greatness as a performer was the possibility of transformation. He looks like a different person in each of the roles that he performs, and I think that was a prefiguration of that which we might call the Stanislavski technique, that he became the role, and more than just the costume or the particular makeup or wig that he was wearing, I think the interior identification with a role made him strong.
There are certainly lots of photographs of Nijinsky, particularly the ones of him in performance are always riveting. I think the magnetism is apparent. Would he stand out in a ballet company today, do you think?
I don't think that's a relevant question, because obviously everything has changed. People look different. People are shorter. People are heavier. People are taller. People are thinner. The air is different. Our experience is different. Our eye is different. I'm extremely happy that there are no existing films of him.
Yes, that's interesting, isn't it? It is all in our imagination.
I think it was very, very smart that Diaghilev refused to have him filmed.
The reason I ask it is because he has come to us as so far and away the great dancer of that company, of that era. He was sui generis, really. You know, I wonder if it's possible for anyone to be like that nowadays, a dancer to be so far ahead of the pack.
I think that, what was it, the end of the 60s, the beginning of the 70s, probably dancers like Rudolf Nureyev had a similar superstar standing, Baryshnikov. But the difference is that Nijinsky, his aura as a great star was only the beginning. From the height of this adulation, he began to create. And his creation negated everything that he was or that he was praised for. He created ballets in which he didn't jump. And if we consider his evolution as a person, he was a great star who decided to do choreography, which had not to do with his stardom. He created ballets which were designed with completely other concepts.
But just speaking about his choreography, I mean, for example, say with The Rite of Spring. Now, that is remembered not for its choreography by Nijinsky, but for Stravinsky's music. That's what's made that work famous.
I don't think you can compare them, because the score of Stravinsky's Rite of Spring exists on paper, note for note, and all the alterations and changes that he made over
That's
the years
right.
exist. So it can be played and it can be determined, do I like this, do I not like this? There was no film, there was no notation of his work, and so we can't really judge it.
So on what basis then do you praise him as a choreographer?
I praise the concept, because we know what he demanded. We know that Je was the first ballet in modern dress. We know that Je was the first ballet that dealt with a libretto, which was not a libretto of action, but a libretto of interior emotional situations, which had never been one before. We know that L'Après-midi d'un Faune was a ballet which was designed from the beginning to the end, and we have many, many photographs of those positions. We know from eyewitnesses what he demanded in a rehearsal, and so we can conclude from that this aspect of choreography had not existed before Nijinsky.
Well, when it comes to making a performance centered around Nijinsky, one of the daunting tasks, I imagine, is how you represent the dancer whose abilities are so legendary. I mean, for me, in my imagination, no living dancer can leap as high as Nijinsky did. Mm-hmm. Was that a challenge that you had to find
absolutely.
A way to overcome?
I think the whole idea of making a ballet about Nijinsky, you're absolutely right. It is a daunting thought, how to approach it. To the direct question of representing his legend physically, it is impossible. And I think for that reason, in the ballet, there is one major character who expresses a lot about his interior landscape, I would say, his interior emotional landscape. There are other dancers who represent aspects of this transformational side of him, the fact that he could become an object of incredible sensuality and eroticism as the golden slave or as the faun, that he had an androgynous quality as the rose, or that he represented a picture of suffering humanity through the character of Petrushka. These are aspects of his character or of his artistry which are also represented by other dancers within the ballet.
So you have several dancers who play
yes.
him in the course of the work.
Because of the variety of the expression of his dance, we don't expect one dancer to have the burden to tell us this is how Nijinsky dance. And I don't think we can do that anyway, because ballet cannot be a documentary. We cannot.
Yes, well, I wanted to ask you that. I mean, how much is this a sort of bio-ballet? Is it a narrative portrayal of his life?
No, it begins actually in 1919, on the 19th of January, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, in the Suretta House, which is a hotel in Switzerland, St. Moritz.
Now, this is an important moment.
Yeah, he danced publicly for the last time. So the ballet actually begins there. And it's very interesting that I, of course, researched that hotel and that room and reconstructed that room through the photographs that I took of every detail of the room, the proportion of the room. So the ballet begins with this very strange performance, which was called His Marriage with God. And it begins, in a sense, almost not like a ballet, almost like a theater piece, but through this dancing, he believes that he sees Diaghilev, who was his mentor, his supporter, his lover, and it takes him into experiencing moments in his life. Not necessarily chronological, they are more fragmentary. The ballet ends again in the Suvretta House, in this room where he danced, but the room is different. The room is as if war-torn, I suppose you could say, because he said at one point, Nijinsky is not mad, it's the world which is mad. We have to understand that one of the reasons probably that accelerated his fall into madness was his experience of the First World War. He was deeply, deeply affected by the brutality and aggression of the world at that time.
And John Neumeyer's ballet Nijinsky is being performed by the Australian Ballet, first in Melbourne this month, then next month in Adelaide, and in November in Sydney. There are details on our website. John, I'll let you get back to rehearsal. How are you feeling just at this point?
Oh, difficult. I mean, but the interesting thing for me is in giving a ballet to another company, to consider it a creation, not considering it as a kind of... I mean, it is a recreation in the sense that there are a series of steps and there is a structure. But to see what it's like with other people and to try to help those people to find something of themselves in the work that they're doing. And we're in the middle of this because we have several casts. And of course, for this particular work, I've done the sets, costumes, and the lighting concept myself. So I'm kind of running back and forth between the theater.
Swapping hats.
Yes, exactly.
Well, it's great to speak with you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
This is Books and Arts with Amanda Smith.
Discover the best of RN on Facebook. Simply search for ABC RN.